Hello and welcome to Sports Tech Live, the official Hype Sports Innovation podcast, providing all the must-know info on every aspect of the sports tech and Web 3.0 industries. Today's episode features Brian J. Esposito, the founder and president of Esposito Intellectual Enterprises. Brian brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to any situation with his drive, ethics, and passion for connecting and working with top executives around the globe. In short, today's episode is a can't miss, so sit down, buckle up, and enjoy the show.
Okay, so good to see you, Brian. Thanks for joining. We have some good discussions regardless, and I thought maybe it's a good opportunity maybe to have a to share a little bit of your, I would say, insights. I know you're for 20 good years, you're in business and working with entrepreneurs, and not many people are aware of your journey. From the outside, everything looks rosy, but I'm sure, like me, you had your highs and lows, and we are in a special time now, I believe, in the downturn, which I think you believe it's a good spell also for, it has its upsides as well, but, we'll learn, and happy to hear about this as well. But I want to use this opportunity maybe to for people to get to know you a little bit, your background, and maybe some, the journey you've been, you've created to be where you are today.
Yeah, well, thanks, Amir. It's a pleasure to know and get to work with you and the incredible Hype brand and accelerator that you've built. So you mentioned 20 good years. Most of those years were bad, but we are north of 20 years of building my professional career. And it started in the late 90s where I built the first B2B, B2C e-commerce platform for the beauty industry. So always forward thinking. At the time, I was driving around to salons and spas trying to sell nail polish, lotions, and potions, and getting thrown out everywhere you can think of. Oh. I said, there's just got to be a better way. So that's when I sat down, taught myself to code, and I built a website. So great timing. I had access to almost every beauty brand you could think of due to family legacy in that industry, and we were the first to do that and deploy, building an e-commerce website, servicing professionals and beauty retail consumers around the world. It took off like wildfire, and always thinking, where is this going? I became Amazon's first beauty luxe retailer in the early 2000s because I knew that's where people were going to ultimately get all of their stuff, one-stop shop. We were Jet.com's first retailer. I was first to launch Google Checkout Wallet, which was an ultimate major failure, but I was still there working with Google, and we were the first website to deploy it. And that got my appetite for technology, first and foremost. Secondly, during my beauty career, I did that so wrong for 15 years. I was used to make so many brands, celebrities, entertainers, athletes very wealthy. They used my knowledge, my experience, my distribution, and all the channels that I opened up to make their IP and brand even more valuable. I had the wrong mindset. I was happy just getting the brand to distribute, but I was like an ant farm. I wasn't part of the exit that they ultimately had if Procter & Gamble bought them, or L'Oreal, or LVMH. A lot of these brands have big acquisitions. Because
you were paid for your money, but you were not part of the celebration in the end.
Nope.
You were paid by the time, sorry, by your time as giving services, correct me if I'm wrong, but
no, I was paid.
You had no equity.
No equity. I earned money buying products at a discount, okay, and reselling them. But no, by the time they had an exit or they were growing, as a term I use all the time called business amnesia, they just completely forgot about me, which was okay. But ultimately, what happened on my career in 2016, got into a terrible car accident when a drunk driver hit me head on just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And
when was that?
February of 2016. Wow. So at that time, I was 16 plus years building my professional career. I had 30 plus holdings in my holding company, including the beauty beauty company, which was the biggest. And I often say I'll take the hit because that lady could have killed somebody, so I'm glad she hit me. Secondly, I'm very grateful that that happened to me because my entire model was wrong. I was surrounded by the wrong people. When I was ripped out of the equation, I couldn't work like I typically work or maneuver like I typically maneuver due to injury and that accident. Everything fell apart. So I had to rebuild with less than nothing. And again,
what happened to you? What happened to you? First of all, physically, you were hospitalized.
It was more of concussion type issues. Like my brain works very fast, so I couldn't even do 1 + 1. It would take me a while to calculate that. So it was unless you've been in that type of accident or you've had that type of a head injury, it's very hard to explain. But it's you just feel out of body.
Like the whiplash.
It could be along those lines, but everything doesn't feel in sync. And things are in slow motion, and it's just very bizarre.
Well, how long?
Probably felt like that for 3 years, slowly coming back. Not many people realized, because even me slowed down, still was pretty good, because I work very fast and I put things together very fast. But I had to rebuild. Point being, when people get upset or they don't think they have the resources to do things, I disagree. I at that moment had less than nothing. I had so much debt and obligations and responsibilities that I had to recoup and fix and get back to an even playing field. So if you think if you're even and you have no resources, you can move mountains. I had to do it with, again, less than nothing. Which is when you have to be very strong with your mind. Your mental health and wellness has to be so strong when you're going into anything or any decision making or starting a company. And secondly, you have to surround yourself with the right people. My biggest failure up until that time was I just did not have the right support systems in place for my companies. The management teams were not correct. My legal wasn't correct. My accounting wasn't correct. I pulled what I thought was the best for my geographical location, which was wrong. I was a global company. I didn't pull the best talent from around the world, which is what I do now. You don't have to be necessary in a geographical location of a company to be the best principal or executive running or a part of that company. So it was a wild ride. But now what I do is I build value for myself and my holdings.
And before we get to what you're doing now, and I know you're doing, you know, hearing from startups and other companies you work with, and I often hear the difference and the impact you have on them. And obviously you're in a totally different position now. And on the other hand, I think you're now, you know, took this into a position where you can really help them and make an impact on them, really learning from where you were. But before, let me still go back there. When you were like in the what I call the juice of the garbage, and I think we've been there. I've been there myself, and I think these were the biggest lessons from, you know, for me, all those places where it looks like end of the world. How did you pull out? What because this is, you know, some of the people listening to us now, especially the founders, maybe can relate to where you were, and maybe they are there now. Especially with what's happening now around us, how did you pull yourself out?
First thing I had to do mentally was not feel bad for myself or sit in a corner and cry, why me? You know, problems happen to everybody. It doesn't matter what you have in the bank. Nobody's immune to them.
Yeah, but that's nice. You know, how did you do that? You know, what did you use? Any other mentors? Did you read? Did you use a specific, I don't know, you took, what helped you? Because, you know, when you're down there, it's very difficult to tell people, you know, don't feel sorry for yourself. It's nice to say they will tell us, yeah?
Yeah, well, again, my journey is a little bit different than the average person. I've been surrounded by problems my entire life that I had to overcome. Things happened to me that I never would have been able to plan for, prepare for, and I just had to figure it out. Because I'm so used to that, honestly, I get more nervous when things are easy.
When things are good, yeah, what do we do here? I feel the same.
I'm looking like there's a problem somewhere I'm not seeing. So for me, and I don't want to sound obnoxious or arrogant, but, you know, I'm the youngest of four, by 10 to 13 years with my siblings. That being raised in that type of environment, I saw death at an early age. I just realized what was important in life, what was not. I realized, as my company motto is, time is our most precious commodity. I look at life a little bit different than the average person. And I also am not money oriented. Like, I'm not chasing things and money. I'm chasing creating and building value and creating opportunities. That's my oxygen. I love doing that for my own holdings, and I love doing that for the companies that I get to work with. So for me, it was another problem I had to figure out, but I was grateful for it because everything was wrong. And I couldn't have really fixed my model without that accident. I needed it.
Why? Why this accident really shifted your mind? What happened?
It was being pushed off a mountain. It was ripping a Band-Aid off. It had to be that abrupt and that, dramatic. It had to just be something of that scale. Otherwise, I would have been trying to piecemeal fixing things, replacing people. It just would have been, I don't think I would have ended up in the outcome that I am today with, I think, a very strong ecosystem and world that I built. Now there's over 85 companies in my holdings. There's over 150 joint ventures, and we're operating in 25 different industries, and that continues to grow. I couldn't have scaled that with the teams and the strategy I had in place. Everything had to get wiped out. And so maybe that's me rationalizing or justifying it, but that's what I really believe.
I can relate to that. Sometimes, as they say, it has to be to get worse before it's getting better. And sometimes somebody needs to kick us in the head really very, very hard for us to really make a change. Otherwise, you know, we are on this route, and, you know, we usually the last to see that it's the wrong direction or the wrong vector. Now, when you started shifting and started creating a new business model, as you're explaining, and what were the new decisions you took? Were they rational? Like, can you say now, okay, what I decided to do differently was A, B, and C?
No. That was A through Z, figuring out which will stick. The most important thing I had to do was value myself first. That was something I did wrong for my entire life and career. I used the term I was always last to eat, and I thought that was a very kind and correct way to do things. It's not, for multiple reasons. If you're first to eat, meaning if you pay yourself first for the value that you're creating and you're smart with your money, then you become your own bank for your own projects because you have your own capital and your own resource. You don't have to go and get lines of credit. You don't have to go to the market and raise money. So if I was paying myself first for those 15, 16 years, it would have been an arsenal of resources to help me weather that situation. However, with that being said, I'm still glad I wasn't doing that because I needed to change everything. Secondly, I don't believe now, being 41 and learning more every day through life, I don't think you can properly take care of other people unless you're properly taking care of yourself, unless you're in a good financial and mental health and wellness position of strength.
Yeah.
I don't think you're doing people service if you're just like giving people the crumbs that you can give them. But if you're in a great place and you can continue to fuel your own motivations, your own desires, and your own want out of life, and that's through your business or businesses, then the people that you're supporting are going to be elevated to that level as well. So that was the most important letter, like you were saying.
So it seems like,
how do I value myself? And not to interrupt you,
but it seems like you've been to a process internally where you worked on yourself and you created this. Yeah, created this, you know, self-worth, you know, and then building your, I would say, your, you know, getting things together there, which enabled you later on to serve and to work with your clients.
Yeah, correct. And it's not easy to sit back and say, what are you worth as a person? And my whole career, I know what a product's worth based on cost and distribution channels and what the MSRP is. Same thing with a piece of technology or IP. But when you start to look at how do you value yourself, it's a weird question to ask. So I had to come up with a really unique model to rebuild generating income and generating revenues by what am I worth? And then how do I support that worth with tangible results? I had to back it with, here's my value, and I want that value to continue to go up, but only based off of my performances on the work that I'm doing and the companies that I'm involved with.
Yeah, especially where you are the core of your services. So you bring yourself, and maybe it's a good time to explain a little bit what you do and how do you support companies?
Right now, I'm either a substantial equity owner of companies, majority owner, wholly owned, or very special arrangement with companies that want to bring me on. I'm not passive at all. I mentioned on our webinar last week, capital does not go into anything until I can de-risk that capital. So if companies want to work with me, I become part of the management team. I need to make sure that they are doing things ethically and correctly with use of proceeds and that they're managing their business correctly. And then secondly, it gets really fun and interesting is if a company that may not have any real value or any real trajectory, we start to look at all of my holdings and it's glorified matchmaking. It's peanut butter and jelly. What can we attach to this company that's in my ownership or I have control over to give them momentum, to give them partnerships, to open up new resources for them and to give them clients or customers or channel to start generating positive earnings. That's amazing. That's a very infectious situation for these companies because they start to feel really good about themselves when they're in motion. It's a snowball effect. And then for Esposito Intellect Enterprises, my holding company, to be able to be a spoke in their wheel to keep them in motion and constantly in motion, that's what it's all about. That's why you go into business, is to feel good about yourself, is to generate. I don't think you should be in business unless you're generating revenue. This whole idea of unicorn pre-revenue, I'm not a subscriber of that anymore because I used to be and it never worked out. It was just money that just disappeared and it was a good shot. You got to be in business to make money. And if you were generating revenue over the last 2 years, you could have went and borrowed money for 0% interest. Governments were pushing out money to keep people employed, to keep companies' doors open. And it's a shame that there was great startups out there with great technology and great services, but because they didn't have any revenue, they couldn't take advantage of those opportunities that the world economy was providing to them. You got to be making money if you're in business. And don't compare yourself to other people or companies. You got to put blinders on as it relates to feeling inadequate about where you are in your position as a CEO or as a founder. Go into the market with what you want to do. Then go and find one customer in your local economy or your local town, or bring on an advisor that has access to certain clients, and just get one customer and perfect your model. And knock it out of the park, and then go get 2, and then you go get 4, and then you get 8, then you get 16, and you get 13, and you start to create a business, and that's what you need to be doing. Yeah. Otherwise, you drive yourself crazy. You'll keep trying to raise money, running out of money, and at some point you're diluted out of your own company, and you're feeling miserable. And that's, you don't need to be in that position if you'll just look at history and you're smart about your strategy and you're smart about your decisions.
Yeah, I heard you before, and I like the fact that you're very much working with the founders on, you know, creating this real validation and working for creating revenue and, you know, be legs on the ground and less with all kind of, I would say, you know, just storytelling. Yeah, and I like it very much. And now, you're also now, and as I understand, starting to get you already in the Web3 and NFTs. And also I want to, you know, throw in the you know, we are in July 2022 and the market is making some, you know, strange signs. You know, specifically we at Hype Now just opened a new Web3 cycle with startups in sports tech. Focusing on Web3, NFT, Metaverse, blockchain. How do you see that? Because, you know, this is could be not all the Web3 startups will be able to generate revenue straight away. It's sometimes longer process now than You know, if you're a regular, you know, if you have a product, it's a little bit different. Maybe NFT, but most of those metaverse, it's still early stage. How do you look at that? What's your strategy on that? What kind of, you know, what's your input here?
Yeah, first, make sure you're truly Web3. A lot of these companies are Web 2.5. They're not the true definition.
What's the difference?
Fully decentralized. And you know, we are, for example, one of our holdings, MetaLife, is what we believe is the first real true Web 3.0 company where we're 100% decentralized, moving data, content, connectivity in an environment that doesn't rely on any servers. So it's a serverless messenger content distribution, and it's completely owned. And
so if I have a metaverse platform, amazing metaverse platform, on blockchain, but I'm the sole owner, it's not Web3.
Where is it being housed? Is it on servers somewhere for people to access it?
Yeah.
That would be a centralized location for people to be able to access the experiences and the data or whatever your offering is. So in the definition of what a Web3 environment is, it's completely decentralized. And in the realistic definition, it's got to be serverless, where it's on these things that we all own and control. We don't necessarily own and control these like we think we do, because there's the app stores that allow certain apps to be able to be on there, and the data is not really owned by the consumer. You know, some of our projects like MetaLife, like Nodal, we believe that privacy's got to be completely first and foremost focused, that we own our data. And if we want to monetize that data, we should be given the opportunities to resell it or utilize it in a fashion where we're earning the money from it, because it's our data. But to answer your other question, as far as what these companies can do, I'm referencing this movement much like when Facebook and Instagram were first getting started and there was no social media manager or title in a company. It's the same thing happening now, where there's so many opportunities to go out and get clients, whether they're mom and pop shops in your local town or go and work with some national or global brands and help guide them to participate in this space. Some of our holdings have been building metaverses for five plus years now, like Somnium Space, you know, one of my favorite VR worlds out there. It was like pulling teeth to get a brand to go into that space up until a year ago. Now everybody's flooding in like it's the San Francisco gold rush. If you don't have the proper resources, talent, or strategy, I think a brand will do itself a major disservice by trying to even say that they're in the metaverse or that they are Web3. Don't do it. If you can't do it correctly and you're not offering any real utility or value to your audience, then you're better off waiting and doing it in the right fashion. So, you know, with that being said, all these companies that want to be in Web3, that have a great vision or great strategy or a solution they want to offer the market, there's so many clients that need help. I think you can be generating revenue right now. I think you can be opening up things like agencies that are servicing brands and IP or companies, no matter what their size, and being their partner to make sure that they're properly servicing the community and that there's real value that they're generating for their companies.
Got it. Now, you know, having said that, if you're now mentoring a startup that is, you know, needs to raise money and obviously needs to get traction, meanwhile, what would how would you guide them? What will be your first things you'll say to them?
Well, with my model, it's let's partner you up with any of my holdings or my holdings customers where we can get you generating some business. So that could be either here's a paid client, a paid pilot program, or even just a pilot program in general, where we can show what is the use case of your company and how it applies into this market and what need are you filling. And then make sure that you're properly pricing that so it can scale and that you can actually onboard additional clients. And that would be prior to any raising capital. in tandem of that is what can we do to add to your valuation? So bringing in our accounting firms to do true third-party credited valuations on the company to make sure when you're going into the market, you didn't just make something up and you're trying to raise money off a number that's not really justifiable. And then with my work, let's make you more valuable. Let's get you on a pipeline and a roadmap to start generating positive earnings. Now raising money is a hell of a lot easier when someone sees that a company is in motion and is in business. With my definition of business is generating revenue. Otherwise, I think you run yourself wild, especially in this market, trying to raise money when you don't have any inclination that there's going to be a paid customer at some point. You got to bring in money. I don't. It's simple as that. This idea of raising money off of nothing is relatively new. You go back in our history, you raise money to fuel a business. You bring in more capital to grow a business that's generating earnings. I don't like this VC model where if you have one unicorn and you got 100 failures that you're a successful VC. You should have. One of our early conversations, Amir, was let's help as many of these startups running through your amazing program as possible. Let's make them all succeed. Let's have them all share resources and make this a safe home for companies and IP to be able to thrive and survive. That's what I've been doing. That's what I've been doing for most of my career. I just wasn't doing it right until the last 6 years. And so again, I will help them become more valuable. I will help them generate revenue. And then the capital will come in to support the growth of the company. Yeah.
I like the very, I would say, practical, tangible approach. Let me ask you a question I like to ask towards the end of this conversation. What do you think you will be doing when you grow up,
Brian? Unfortunately, I was born to work. Again, I'm not money oriented, so it's not about the money for me. It's about I like helping people. I like helping companies. If they're a startup, even up to a Fortune 500 company, I just love being in those conversations. I love now that I'm a little bit older that I have a voice that's heard in a room and I have a track record that can be referenced. So if I can continue doing this in a method where it doesn't impact my health or I could still have a nice balance of life, I'd love to keep doing this forever. And it's not about the kudos. It's not about the look at all the great things we're doing. It's just about leaving a positive mark on this life and helping companies succeed, therefore helping people part of those companies succeed. That's what I want to keep doing. That might change tomorrow, but right now that's what I want to keep doing.
Is there like a specific story you can share with us about a company or a founder that you worked with and just to give us an idea?
Very powerful one is Turncoin, Turncoin. It's a registered digital SEC security. It's the first of its kind that we created. Dear friend and colleague in many initiatives, Roel Campos was very important in building this. He was a previous commissioner of the United States SEC. Turncoin and its operating company, Virtual Stacks, now has a $15 billion valuation. Last year, this time, we had an $800 million valuation, so we continue to grow. We are a publicly traded SEC registered digital security. We have the full investment and support of people like Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Von Miller, Cam Jordan, Randy Jackson from American Idol. So think top celebrities, entertainers, actors, musicians, athletes, business people. And what we've created is the ability to buy virtual shares of them. So they can think of it's a NASDAQ for people. So people can actually buy a tangible virtual share of them. It's not attached to their equity and it's not attached to their businesses. It's just another liquidity mechanism for very famous people to be able to generate more revenues and also have another way of engagement with their audience. The other more powerful part of that business model is think of a GoFundMe and a person going public in the same mechanism. So as an amateur or novice, you can issue virtual shares of yourself on Virtual Stacks. And if you want to be the next Billy Joel, you can sell virtual shares to your friends, your family, your piano teacher to be able to take more lessons, to book out a gig. You want to be the next Derek Jeter. You can sell virtual shares of yourself to your coaches, your teachers, your peers, your teammates, and you continue to get a new mitt, get new cleats, take baseball lessons, whatever the case may be. But that applies to every person in every industry around the world can issue their own virtual shares on this platform in a fully regulated environment with great legal and accounting and compliance in over 100-plus countries. And we've built this thing together. Rudolf Markov, the CEO and founder, speaking at an investment summit in Dubai many years ago, saw him speak about what he was building, and I was hooked. I usually don't chase, but I sat down with him. We connected right away, and I said, I need to be part of this with you. This will change the lives of many people and allow people to not give up on their dreams. So selfishly, I gave up on playing baseball. My favorite thing in the world. I chose to hang up my cleats in college.
You played baseball?
I played baseball. I had a full ride to St. Joe's. It was my favorite thing in the world. It was my passion. Biggest regret I'll ever have was giving that up, because I know my heart and my passions would be much more happier if I was playing single or double A somewhere, making a few thousand bucks a month. I'd still be doing something that I just loved and breathed.
Which is your team?
I was always a Cubs fan, and up until them winning the World Series, people just think I joined the bandwagon, but I was always a Cubs fan and a Bears fan, so for some reason, I'm very pulled to the Chicago market. Anyway, point being, there's so many people, myself included, that give up on their dreams because the financial reasons make them do that. They have to go and get a corporate job. They got to go be a teacher. They got to go and pay their bills and live life. But this can allow people to continue to stay on their path, continue to monetize their passions and dreams, and maybe not give up on it, and maybe become the next biggest thing in the world. So that company is very special, amazing team, hundreds of people that are now involved, and we keep growing pretty rapidly.
And just to add on this, I think looking at sports and innovation, I think as a sports, somebody who loves sports and innovation, I think we can find a way to put these two together. Yeah. Great stuff. So, Brian, I want to thank you for this one. I'm sure we'll continue to do those conversations. I think it's always inspiring, and looking forward to continue to see how you impact founders and companies and doing good, and to continue to do good together.
Oh, absolutely, man. I really appreciate the opportunity, and all you startup founders listening, just know everything does happen for a reason. The harder the journey, the more rewarding the outcome. Just stick to it, and it'll all make sense when you look back and realize that everything does happen for a reason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amir.
That's it for today's session. Be sure to check out all our previous and future recordings by following us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and more by searching for Hype Sports Innovation. Until next time.